Set.
Oh, they're away, and Gatling got away brilliantly indeed. He's ahead of the field at the moment, and Bolt going very near. Here comes Usain Bolt! Usain Bolt storming through, he takes it again. Blake gets the silver, 9.64! Oh, he's retained his title in the most emphatic way. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Usain Bolt of Jamaica is the fastest man on the planet.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 95 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I am not joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter, at BreakBallsPod. Or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. It's just me today, riding solo once again. Once again, the last time was in May, but this time it's because the Rona finally got to us, folks. John has COVID. Fortunately, he's all vaxxed up, so it's nice and mild, but got to keep DJ Bingington and I and Apollo safe. So he's out this week, but John, if you're listening, hope you feel better, buddy. We'll miss you. And John is probably the only thing that everyone will miss this week because nothing has really happened. Since we last spoke, Manfred had his press conference last Thursday, and we were wrong, actually. We will take this one on the chin. We thought for sure that he was going to announce the cancellation or at least the postponement of spring training, and he didn't. He is remaining hopeful. He even called himself an optimist, but obviously, spring training ain't happening anytime soon. The pitchers and catchers were supposed to report this week. That's not happening. And I believe they're supposed to start games by like the 25th or the 26th, which obviously isn't going to happen. So I don't really know where it stands. I mean, his press conference was a joke. I'm not going to go too much into it since we're now a week past it. But among many ridiculous things he said, he stated that, you know, owning a Major League Baseball team, the return on investment over time is, you know, less than you would get in the stock market, which is so hilariously false that it's almost, I almost couldn't believe that he said it. I mean, this guy was just bold-faced lying to the press, and I can understand why he wasn't really called that by the press, even though I kind of wish that they would hold someone like Manfred a little bit more accountable, but I understand that it's a lot more complicated than just calling these guys out when everyone has to work together and they actually need, you know, access to places like the clubhouse that I would imagine they have to depend on Major League Baseball for. And if it was actually worse in the stock market, why the fuck would someone like Steve Cohen buy a Major League Baseball team to the tune of $2 billion? This guy's made $14 billion in the stock market. So that implies that he doesn't know what he's doing and he's throwing money away. That doesn't really seem like the MO of most of these guys, and that's because it's not. I mean, if the return on investment were really that low, would the Steinbrenner family be billionaires right now? Since Senior bought the team in the 70s, you have to assume that they wouldn't be because, according to Manfred, the return on investment is lower than the stock market, which apparently is like 9% over a certain amount of years or something. I'm not very well versed in stocks, so I'm not going to pretend to know more than that. But I do know that this guy's fucking full of shit. And unfortunately for the league, what they don't have in their pocket this time around, as opposed to the 94 strike and all those labor nightmares from the 94 season where they canceled the World Series, they don't have total control over the media, and they don't have total control over the information that is being disseminated to us, the fans, because we have this glorious invention called the internet, where we are able to look up all of these things on our own and connect with players and connect even with sports reporters and get a broader picture of the owners and Major League and their revenue, even though those numbers aren't quite public to the exact. But there are plenty of sites out there that have, I'm willing to say, pretty accurate estimations of the media deals and all that stuff, so we kind of know what the league makes. It hasn't been all terrible. I mean, we have no deal yet. We don't have anything like that. But the league and the Players Association have come to the agreement that Universal DH is now going to be a thing. Thank fucking God. Sorry to Matt and all the other Breaking Balls listeners who like pitchers hitting and they like that brand of baseball. And listen, I don't get it in terms of I don't get how people like it, but I respect it. And I'm sorry that that's coming to an end for you, but I couldn't be happier. I mean, I would imagine National League fans, even though you guys kind of like that brand of baseball because it's what you're used to, you have to be relieved that you're not going to have to see some of your pitchers go onto the fucking IL because they get hurt swinging a bat. Cough, cough, Jacob DeGrom. I mean, maybe we can get some full seasons out of these guys when they're not doing a portion of the game that over the course of the sample, large sample size turns out to be a fucking joke. They hit like 117 or whatever. So I know the Bartolo home runs and everything are great, but they are now just part of baseball history and we won't have to see it ever again. Plus, they're implementing a draft lottery. They're getting rid of the high draft picks for the teams that come in last place. They're hoping that this is going to mitigate tanking. Apparently, some of the other pro leagues have implemented the same sort of thing to also try to mitigate tanking. And whether it works remains to be seen. But hey, it's a step in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure Bob Nutting of the Pirates is fucking losing his shit over this because I think only like 27 of the owners or like 25 or something like that have to vote to ratify these things. And I have to imagine that he voted no because that has literally been his only plan as an owner for basically the last decade or so. The league and the Players Association, they met on Saturday. Nothing came of it. They also met today. I'm recording this on Thursday, the 17th. They met for a total of 19 minutes. I imagine they just walked in and, I don't know, gave each other the finger a couple of times and then walked out because what the fuck could have possibly gone on in those 19 minutes? I know that there's a reason why we don't know the ins and outs of exactly what's said in these rooms, and anything that gets leaked is, you know, suspect because who knows if it's actually true, but wouldn't you just love to be like a fly on the wall just to see what the fuck kind of nonsense happens in a 19-minute meeting? Like, they got everyone down there, they all get there, they sit down, then they just are like, we're not gonna agree, are we? Nope. All right, see you guys. Apparently, according to Jeff Passan anyway, he thinks that the meetings will pick up a little bit of steam in that they'll be more frequent because we are getting dangerously close to opening day. And my estimation, I mean, you have to assume that the players need at least 2 or 3 weeks to be able to get ready to play a full season. And opening day is on March 31st, which is exactly 6 weeks from today. So that would mean they have to come to an agreement with sometime within the next 3 weeks. Now, again, this is basing on my estimation about how long the players would need, but I think that that's probably it. And whether or not that's gonna happen, I don't know. I mean, one side is really looking to improve the game and improve the lives of the athletes that play the game and the athletes that we all come down to the field to watch and we watch on TV and we talk about and we root for, and we wear their names on our back, and they're looking to improve the lives of those men now and moving forward. And the other side of this labor dispute is looking to break the union. That's really what this boils down to. Because like we had mentioned last week, this is over like 1% of revenue that the owners are just not willing to budge. They are not really doing what they have to. And we're at a stalemate. And I know that you guys are probably tired of hearing it. I'm tired of talking about it to a certain extent because it's frustrating. It's very frustrating, and I don't know. Hopefully we see some movement in the next few weeks, and if not, one side clearly wants to play, and the other one is fucking playing games. Figuratively speaking, that is. Since we are blowing right past spring training, it seems, I am very disappointed in the fact that we're gonna miss Springo this year. And not only are we missing Springo, but now I'm missing John saying, Springo! Even though I just did it, but it won't be as good as John's.
Wait, guys!
We can fix that.
You know what else people are really liking, Emster?
Springo!
I mean, we tried to come up with like a lockout sort of thing. Even DJ Bingington was giving us some ideas like a lingo or some kind of, but that didn't really work because lingo is actually like a word. So it just didn't work because we need baseball. We need spring training. And even though I would only watch like one spring training game and then be over it, Now, I would fucking kill for some spring training. I would kill to hear that so-and-so is in the best shape of their life. I would kill to see a graphic on the screen showing the temperature in the city of the team and the temperature in the spring training city. All of this shit that is always so cheesy and played out every year now is like something I am longing for, like a fucking oasis in a desert. But actually, I'm getting ahead of myself with my lamenting about no Springo. Some of you listening may be new listeners and have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. Springo was our version of spring training bingo that John and I came up with last year. It was pretty funny, if I do say so myself, and it was a lot of fun. I don't think anyone actually got Springo. I think maybe only a couple people played, including John and I, and we were hoping to maybe give it a little bit more steam this year. We have a few more listeners. I have a few more followers on Twitter, but MLB is fucking around, so I don't know when we're going to get it. I don't know when we're going to get Springo. We might have to wait until 2023. Or we could have an abridged version of Springo, maybe, if they do a short spring training. But then I'm going to have to change up all the boxes because there's going to be some new shit. We're going to have some old favorites, I'm sure. But then because it's an abridged version, they're going to be going overboard talking about that. So we're going to have to come up with some new things. If anyone listening has some new one-liners that they think the announcers would be saying during a short spring training, call them into the hotline. We are in the home stretch for the Winter Olympics. We are approaching the final day, which is this coming Sunday, and this is the most attention I've ever paid to probably any Olympics, but certainly the winter. And it's been pretty enjoyable. I mean, it's been fun to watch with DJ Bingington, and John and I have been watching it, and I've been having a really good time, but I have made the official assessment that sports that are judged and given points by people on some panel are fucking whack. And what I'm about to say, this is no disrespect to any dancers who are listening. I love dance. I think it's a beautiful art, and I think dance competitions are a really athletic and beautiful artistic thing, and there's nothing wrong with them. They're awesome. But sports that are judged and given points, like figure skating, all the half pipes, all the freestyle skiing stuff, those are dance competitions. So we don't consider a dance competition a sport, but can anyone tell me the difference between the two? Because even dance competitions, like, it's art because it's dance and that's how we categorize dance. But once you move it into competition land, it's a sport. But if it's not, then how are we considering these things sports when someone could lay down an amazing run on the half pipe or do an amazing routine and it gets judged by someone sitting behind a fucking desk just watching? I mean, can you imagine if baseball games were decided in this manner? We would not get past game one because there'd be so much fighting and arguing over how to determine what the score is, where now it's an absolute joke. I mean, the figure skating is a little bit better, albeit more confusing, because DJ Bingington and I just started watching this four-part series called Meddling, which is about the 2002 pairs skating scandal with the Russian team and the Canadian team, and the Canadian team had a perfect routine. The Russian team, they stumbled a little bit, but they ended up getting gold, and it was this whole scandal with one of the judges, and back then they had the 6.0 point scale where it was just presentation, technique, and then the judges would literally just put what place they think the pair should be in, and that's how it was decided. I mean, that's how it was for like fucking 50 years. What the fuck kind of sport is that? That's not a sport. And every single event with the half pipe or any of the freestyle skiing and snowboarding events that aren't like straight up races where they're just doing like flips and shit and getting judged, every single run where someone does really well, doesn't wipe out, they are totally disappointed by the score they get. I mean, in the half pipe, Hiranu, who ended up winning and his routine was fucking unreal, but his first run, the commentator, I forget the name of the guy who's a, you know, snowboarder or something like that, he was like, oh, that's it. That's a gold run. That's the most difficult and most impressive run that anyone's ever done on the half pipe ever. And then the guy only scored like an 80-something, and the commentator was fucking appalled. He was like, what? What? This is a travesty. So what the fuck? How is this the Olympics? How are these sports? These are just competitions. And I know that sounds like splitting hairs, and it may be, but the fact that the athletes aren't deciding who wins and who loses just by their play style and the game or the competition itself, having the objective to be a winner and a loser that shakes out just by the play on the field is insane to me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe someone can call in that used to do figure skating or used to do any of these type of competitions and maybe give a different perspective on the matter, because to me, it's just insane and it's so out of the realm of what my brain considers sports and considers fair competition that it's hard for me to even categorize it as such. But with that being said, I have been seriously enjoying the House of Speed, not only because that's a fucking awesome name to have, like the indoor track where they do all the skeleton and the bobsled events and everything, but also I watched the monobob event. And listen, this is a first time event for the Olympics. I did not know that. And it's a women only event, which was strange to me. And then I looked into it, and apparently the men, they have the 2-man bobsled and the 4-man, made famous by Cool Runnings. I don't, probably not. It's made famous to me by that movie, but I'm sure some of you used to actually watch the Olympics and were aware of these things before seeing a Disney movie, but I wasn't.
Feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme. Get on up, it's bobsled time, Cool Runnings!
The monobob is being introduced because it's meant to increase interest among women for the bobsled, because as of now, well, as of before this Olympics, they only had the 2-woman bobsled, so now they have the monobob. So I guess the assumption is that it'll drum up more interest because you won't need a second person to be able to do this sort of thing, that you could now do it on your own, and maybe eventually they'll be able to have enough participants to do a 4-woman bobsled, because it's kind of strange to me that they don't have that, but I assume that's because there's not enough participants. But like I said, I'm new into this winter sports thing. And back to the monobob thing, what was really bizarre is the woman who came in first. Her name is Kaylee Humphreys. She won the gold for the United States. She used to compete for Canada. She's from Canada. She's Canadian. She actually recently became a US citizen in order to compete for the United States. And she's won 3 medals for Canada in bobsled, 2 gold and a bronze in past Olympics. But she was being harassed by her coaches and not being treated well by like the Canadian Bobsled and Skeleton Federation or whatever the name is. And she left and now competed for the US and won a fucking gold medal for the US. So I'm not usually one to be like super rah-rah like this, but the Olympics certainly bring it out in me. And I have nothing against Canada at all, but for some reason in the Winter Olympics, because I know they are like America's hat, so therefore it's very cold up there and they love their winter sports, it was really awesome to see Americans beat Canadians, and in this case, someone from Canada become American just to fucking stick it up Canada's ass, and I'm all for that. And before we get into the voicemails, one last thing about the Olympics that I was absolutely shocked about is how horrible NBC's coverage has been of this entire event. I mean, you'd think that after all these years of covering the Olympics, they would have it down by now, but holy shit. And I'm not even meaning the fact that, you know, they weren't allowed to send their studio reporters and yada, yada, yada. They weren't allowed to send a lot of people to China because of the pandemic, and I can understand that, but that wasn't even the issue for me. The score bugs were confusing and horrible. I remember in years past, and I don't know shit about producing TV or even graphic design for that matter, especially graphics live on television, but I remember in years past for both Olympics, summer and winter, in the events where they're being judged and there's a rank after, you know, someone does their routine, they then get a score and now they are ranked among the other athletes that have already done their routines, they would show that after like every single athlete got their score. They have not been doing that for any of the snowboarding, the freestyle skiing, and it doesn't make any sense to me. They have all this space on the screen. They have the ticker at the bottom that I couldn't even tell you what is going across it, but would it fucking kill them to just list the first to 12 and even for the qualifying rounds? So last night, DJ Bingington and I were watching the freestyle skiing women's qualifiers for the half pipe. They say that the top 12 scores, they advance to the medal round. But anytime they would list the athletes in, you know, the order that their scores are coming in, They were only listing 1 through 9. It made no fucking sense. Just list 1 through 12. Like, why wouldn't they do that? And don't even get me started, even though I started fucking 5 minutes ago. The scores, so for all these qualifiers, you know, they get a few times to do things, or even the medal rounds for all of the freestyle and snowboarding trick events. They have like 2 or 3 runs, but their best score is the one that they use. So NBC on the score bug would have the best score highlighted in green, no matter what run they just went on. And they would only have it up for such a short period of time that they would bring the score bug up. My eye would immediately go to the green score because the other ones are grayed out, even though they were on their second run and the second score would be to the right. But by the time my fucking stupid brain realized that, they would have the score bug gone, and then I would have to go on the internet and like look to see what the score was. It's just been a mess, and I really don't understand how after all of these years, it's still a mess. And now let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. Football's over, and it sucks because the Rams won. Because, yeah, Stan Kroenke is the worst owner in sports. He's like everything that's wrong with sports owners, like all compiled into one old dude. And plus, he owns sport teams in 3 different leagues, which shouldn't even be allowed, but he has like his wife and kids technically own them for paperwork purposes, but whatever. And also, now regarding the collective bargaining agreement, so I think that the players, they rolled over too soon. Like, they should have stood their ground on the, like, wanting to hit free agency earlier, because people are always like, oh, yeah, it's terrible that Mike Trout is only getting $400 million when all of these guys are getting, like, 2/3 of these guys haven't hit free agency, so they're likely going to make less than a couple $1 million in their career. And people, it annoys me when people are like, oh, yeah, they made $2 million. That's a lot of money. Well, not really when you consider the fact that they, like, they didn't go to college. They spent 6 years in the minor league, some of them. And then once they retire, like, since they didn't get an education, they don't have really any job opportunities. And I know it's nice when they end up working like with a team in other capacities. Like, it's always nice to see like minor leaguers, like career minor leaguers, end up like coaching or managing or something like that. And yeah, I still can't understand why there are so many people siding with the owners, because I can kind of understand it with the strike, not really, but I can kind of understand it because, like, it was the players striking, but now it's the owners that locked them out. So I guess they're just mad at the players for not rolling over and giving them whatever they want, because they're the ones who are locked out. And yeah, back then, back during the strike, like, the only thing was the teams were controlling the media. Like, they were but now players can, like, get their voices out there, and people are still, like, mad at the players, like, oh, you want to make more than $10,000 in the minor leagues, and then you want to actually get paid once you make it after 6 years? It's dumb.
Honestly, Quinn, I don't get it either, how people can sign with ownership. I mean, I guess I don't get it, but I feel like an explanation for it is it's coming from a place of selfishness, in that they want baseball. So the easiest thing, in their opinion, is to give in to what's essentially, you know, quote unquote, management, the owners, which we all do on a daily basis for our jobs. So they see it as like, you know, I have to do this, so why don't they just do it? Because, it, you know, them doing it, then they're doing it for me, and that's good for my life because I love this entertainment, so they should just do that. And I feel like that's where it's coming from. And not only for the reasons you said about the $2 million not being a lot, because it's relative, right? Like you said, they don't have their foregoing college. They don't have any job experience outside of a professional sport. So they don't have any qualifications for anything. Not only that, but it's relative that it's not that much money in comparison to the sort of money that the players are able to make because of the fact that they're in a union. And I get that it's more money than I'll probably make, that anyone listening will probably make, but that's not relevant to the situation. Unfortunately, none of us were born with the talent to be able to be a professional athlete, so them's the breaks. And the fact that anyone who feels the opposite of that at this point is old enough to come to grips by now that that's not your life and it's not going to be, and that's okay. And it's okay also for guys who do have this talent to try to maximize their value and get as much money as they can when they are generating billions of dollars every year for this league. Not over, well, certainly over the course of a bunch of years, but per season, they estimate that the league makes like $10 billion. And I think that was in like 2019 or 2021 or whatever. Obviously, 2020 was an anomaly, but it's besides the point. Quinn, I'm right there with you. I don't get how anyone could side with the owners on this one. It's pretty cut and dry who wants to play and who wants to fuck around. Thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Bubak.
So there I am, walking through the aisles of Walmart, getting groceries, being a good father that I am, listening to none other than the greatest podcast in the world. When last week's intro stops me in my tracks, I had little goosebumps and began my simultaneous USA, USA, USA chant with a slow clap. Boy, did I have some weird looks. You know, I had an awesome parody, or I do have an awesome parody song written about the lockout that I've been planning on using in my weekly voicemails for like the last month, but there's still just a little bit that I got to finish, and then I'll let you hear the masterpiece. So, Em, you're talking about curling being one of the best sports. Blockhead also mentioned that curling, he doesn't want to know how it works, just let him watch, which is fine. Curling, in my opinion, is by far the best winter sport. Can't say I've actually played it. Well, that's the Olympic version, that is. I have played curling. I guess some sort of curling in the backyard of Archer's Bar in small town Comstock, Nebraska. And when I say small town, I mean small, like you blink and you pass by. Hell, they ride their bicycles backwards over there. We didn't have granite stones. We used milk jugs filled with concrete, and it went well. We had a week-long league, and then the temps warmed up, and the ice melted. And in my younger days, in my my cat-and-around days, my bachelor days, I liked to dibble-dabble in shuffleboard, not the old man down in Florida shuffleboard. I'm talking about tabletop shuffleboard, which is kind of like curling, except it's on a tabletop, and I guess it's not really like curling, but kind of. Has anyone checked on Quinn? Does he still have a foot? You know, last week he said that, you know, if the Rams win Super Bowl, we'd have to shoot his foot off. I hope he didn't do that, bud. And my last thing here is don't knock it until you fucking try it, okay? Knock it on fucking Cincy Chili. Don't knock it until you tried it. Cincinnati Chili is probably one of the best pasta dishes I've ever had. Throw a little cinnamon on that. Oh, my God. Even Cooch himself would give it a, how you doing, how you doing? Hey, kids, it's Bubak. Let baseball come back.
Bubak, I'm so glad that you enjoyed last week's opener, the Jesse Diggins cross-country call. That is not only one of the best calls in Olympic history, but I'd say it's one of the best calls for any sporting event of all time. And the reason that this week's episode had a opener from one of the past summer games, Usain Bolt setting a Olympic record, is because John and I were hoping to follow up last week's call with another epic Winter Olympics call, but there are literally none besides that one and Al Michaels' Do You Believe in Miracles from the 1980 Olympics. There was literally none. I mean, the Brits, they don't get as excited as the American athletes. You can tell the American broadcasters and their style is so different from any other broadcasters in the world. And I've never been more grateful for that than I was when we were trying to find a fucking call to have for this week's episode. It also gives me goosebumps. And I listened to it like 10 times this week on my way home. And it makes me cry every single time I hear it and every time I watch it. If anyone listening, if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen to it and then Google and watch the video. It's incredible. Jesse Diggins, you can literally see her dig down deep and just push through and just blow past her competition and cross that finish line. It's fucking awesome. Shuffleboard is also awesome. And I love any sports like that. Any sports that involve what I like to call the touch, which is basically just being able to apply the right amount of pressure and the right amount of momentum for something to get it into the bullseye, or to hit, you know, a dartboard, or for cornhole or washers or curling or shuffleboard. I fucking love those sports, not only because I'm pretty good at them, but just because they seem like they should be easy and they look like they should be easy, but they are all very difficult. And this is going to make me sound really old, but I'm learning to appreciate more and more sports that are ageless and you can play basically at any point in time in your life. You can play them until you're 80. And that's basically all of these sports. And Bubak, you lost me at the best spaghetti dish you've ever had, and the fact that it includes putting cinnamon on top. Can you please come to New York, for the love of fucking God, and go to a real Italian restaurant? Bubak, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Tom.
Hey, this is Tom McCarthy, at Tom and Quincy on Twitter. I listen to you guys all the time, read all this stuff. Obviously, I'm from Massachusetts. I'm a Boston Red Sox fan, so I was just curious where you guys stand on this whole standoff between the players and the owners, because I've about had enough. Are you guys on the same page where they got to get in the same room, figure this out so we can get a baseball season started sooner than later, or what? Thank you very much.
Finally, we have a real Red Sox fan calling the show. Not our usual Red Sox fan, Block, who is also a San Francisco Giants fan, conveniently enough, the two best teams of the last 20 years, but a real Red Sox fan. Tom, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling in. And yeah, we are definitely on the same page with you that we would love them to get a deal settled, but we stand by the players. And I say we, because I know John feels the same way. Then I stand by the players, and the players, they're willing to come to the negotiating table. They have made some concessions. They have submitted multiple proposals. They've been ready to go. They've been trying to make a deal. The owners have been dragging their feet. The owners are the ones who locked out the players. They didn't have to do that. And they actually can continue playing without a new CBA in place. But the owners have continued to keep the lockout. They could end the lockout at any point in time and let baseball resume. So in my opinion, the owners are the ones that need to get their head out of their ass, and they need to fix this, because they are the ones that are holding up this entire process. I've said it 50 times this episode, and I'll say it 50 more times in future episodes until there's a deal. The players are ready to play. One side of this deal wants to improve the game and improve the future of the game and wants to get back on the field, and the other side is just trying to break the union. Tom, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from John.
Welcome to episode 95 of Breaking Balls. I'm John Snyder, and I have the coronavirus. Hey, everybody, what's going on? It's me. Em probably told you at this point. Finally happened. Caught up with me. I got the Rona. What are you going to do? So I'm out this week. Of course, Em's going to carry on. Sure, it's a great show, even without me. So I'm going to just give you the really brief John Snyder experience. So it's almost like you won't miss me, right? See, with some greatest hits. Oh, yeah, that reminds me of that Futurama episode where yada, yada, yada. We can insert a soft Yankees joke here. Nothing too biting because I don't want to piss off the listeners, but just enough to remind me that I'm a Mets fan. Speaking of the Mets, right? Oh, my God, the fucking Mets. Let's see. The Olympics are crazy, right? I know, the Winter Olympics, right? Better than the Summer Olympics? Well, we'll see, maybe. Let's see, what else? Oh, did I mention that I'm a professional musician? I know it doesn't always fit into conversations, but I try to work it in as much as I can. Let's fast forward to the voicemails. Yeah, Nick, I agree. That's a good point. James, I don't know so much, man. I think that remains to be seen. Oh, here, this one's for DJ Bingington. Splice. Wait, hang on, DJ Bingington. I'll get it this time. Splice. Hit the music. The Super Bowl, right? Yeah, I know the Rams. Crazy. Matt Stafford just let that girl fall down and break her spine. They're paying for it, though, so it's okay. It was a good game, and yeah, my voice is actually starting to hurt, so that's really all I got. have a great show, guys. I will be back next week. Everybody, take care. Stay safe. I'm just going to ride this out, rest up, and I'll be back, well, debatably better than ever. I guess that remains to be seen, too. But I'll be back. Later.
Okay, I'm not going to lie. When I first listened to the voicemail, I actually thought that you were going to drop a Futurama reference. And I was like excitedly listening like, oh, what is this going to be? And then when I realized what you were doing, I was like, oh my fucking God. It got me very, very good.
I'm sorry, Fry, but astronomers renamed Uranus in 2620 to end that stupid joke once and for all. Oh, what's it called now? Urectum.
And the Matt Stafford thing was kind of fucking crazy. I mean, I feel terrible that that woman actually fractured her spine. I'm not surprised because that stage was like fucking 6 feet off the ground. So I can't imagine that that would have ended well for anyone falling backwards like that. As far as Matt Stafford, everyone was giving him shit for the fact that he was just like, oh my God, and turn and walk the other way. Did anyone watch the parade? This man was literally chugging Don Julio 1942 out of the bottle. This man was fucking wasted. What was he gonna do? Just go over and look over the edge and be like, you okay, lady? Like, he walked away because, I mean, has anyone listening ever been fucking wasted before? Sometimes you just can't handle situations and you just have to walk away from them. And you know what? It's a win-win because he was wasted and just walked away and didn't deal with a situation that he wasn't capable of dealing with at the time. And the woman is having her medical stuff paid for by him just because he got shit by people on the internet for just turning and walking the other way. But John, we miss you this week. Can't wait to have you back next week. Feel better, buddy. Our last call is from Nick.
What a career for the legendary Shaun White. It sucks that he couldn't medal. His second run was fantastic. His third run just fell short. I'm not sure if you talked about this, but Emily dove into the Harry Potter movies. So if you haven't seen all seven yet, from what you've seen so far, how would you rank the Harry Potter franchise? Baseball-wise, probably at this point, if there's not a deal by March, probably not to start the season on time. What do you guys think about that? And John, Emily, what did you think of the halftime show? Did you like it? And what did you guys think of the game? Take care.
That halftime show was fucking dope. And what I loved most about it, and also what I loved most about all of the commercials, is the fact that, and I think Blockhead made this point online, is that the shift in who all of these major events and advertising events are now geared towards is firmly at millennials and younger Gen Xers, I suppose, because it used to for years be geared for boomers for a long time because they were the ones who were, you know, spending all the money and they were the majority of the working class making the money. But now that they're all basically retired and on fixed incomes, the shift has happened, the future is now, and we're going to be seeing halftime shows like that that were turning some boomers green. But I know that many other millennials and Gen Xers were fucking loving that the other night. I mean, they fucking killed it, and I would love to see them all go on tour. I would absolutely go see that. And as far as the game, I'm not sure. It was on, but I was busy fending off comic book nerds when I made a comment about there being enough comic book movies already because I saw the Moon Knight commercial. And yes, I know it's a TV show. I was mistaken at the time, but seriously, enough already. And I didn't win any money on my boxes, so actually the game was terrible, in my opinion, because I didn't win any money and the fucking same guy won 3 out of the 4 quarters. So someone made $900 in my boxes and it wasn't me. So fuck the Super Bowl. And Nick, you offered me the perfect segue because normally this is where John and I would do a top 6 and we had a great one planned, but we'll save it for next week. You gave me the perfect top 6 and it's not quite a top 6 because there are 7 Harry Potter movies, but I've only gotten up to the middle of the Half-Blood Prince. So I've watched 5 fully. So I can rank at least the first 5 Harry Potter movies. Now, before I start this, I would like to point out that my favorite character so far is Hedwig. He's really cute. And every single time Harry is somewhere and then leaves without Hedwig, I would literally turn to DJ Bingington and be like, what about Hedwig? And he'd be like, don't fucking worry. He's going to be wherever they're going to be next. But I'm seriously concerned about his well-being. So, all right, let's start at number 5. I put Chamber of Secrets. It was still like, you know, the early times. It was only the second movie. And I thought the ending was kind of weird. Like, I get why they did it because it'll let you know, like, oh, Voldemort is Tom Riddle. They're the same person, and where you didn't know that in the beginning. But It was kind of boring, though the chess scene at the end was cool, and the chess pieces, the way they moved, really creeped me out. The number four, I would put The Order of the Phoenix, and it's not so much that I didn't like it, it's just that Dolores Umbridge is such a fucking biggity bitch that it was infuriating, and I know everyone feels that way because it was awful, and I also hated that she had, like, cat wallpaper, so, like, of course the lady that everyone hates has to, like, love cats. Like, leave cats out of this, okay? They're awesome. Number three is The Sorcerer's Stone. I really like that one just because Harry was such a little kid and he was so adorable, and so was Ron and Hermione's. They were only, like, 10 or 11 years old. And also, it was not higher ranked. I know some people really like it and will rank it around number one or two, but I fucking hate his family, his aunt and uncle and his stupid cousin so much. And I know that's the point, but like I was disturbed by how they were treating him and it upset me greatly. So I didn't like that one as much because they are featured pretty prominently in it for like the first fucking, it seems like the first half of the movie. The number two Harry Potter movie so far out of the five that I've seen, Goblet of Fire. I really like the end. I didn't like that Cedric Diggory is only in this one movie. The way that they marketed Robert Pattinson in that role and the amount of times I'd heard his name and seen him in just like advertisements or whatever over the years before I watched any of these movies, I thought that he was like in the fucking series for a lot longer than like the 2 hours he's in this movie. And it was really sad when he died. I mean, when his dad was like, oh, my boy, oh God, I cried. And the number one is Prisoner of Azkaban. That movie's fucking great. Harry gets the map from, you know, Ron's two twin brothers that shows where everyone is, and that map is really cool. And I love that you're like, you're kind of afraid of Sirius Black the whole time, then it turns out to be a good guy, which is sort of a theme in these movies, that there's a few players that you think are bad and they turn out to be good. Like Snape in that movie, you think that he's like conspiring against Harry, but it turns out that he actually is trying to help him and trying to figure out who's after him, whatever. So far it's been good. I have to admit, I am not as into it as I thought I was going to be and DJ Bingington and John thought I was going to be. And I think it's really because I'm not that big of a Halloween fan. I never really liked Halloween. I don't like scary movies. I am a huge fucking baby when it comes to that kind of stuff. And these movies are high key pretty scary. So there's a lot of times where DJ Bingington will be like, please stop covering your eyes. This is a movie for kids. But I am actually scared. So we'll see. I'm going to watch The Half-Blood Prince. I'm going to watch The Deathly Hallows. And I will do a finite review when I'm done. And I will then do a definitive top seven and rank these motherfuckers where they will stay for life. That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. I want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are amazing. And of course, our callers, you guys are awesome. Thanks for helping me get through this show without John. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun? Feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And I want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ B-I-N-G-I-N-G-T-O-N. And we will catch you guys next week.